Okay.
You go right ahead.
That's nice, this time I got the appendix.
Okay, I'd like to call the meeting to order. And I see we do have a quorum, so we can conduct a meeting. I'll start out with a roll call. Rob Miller.
Here.
John Brady.
Present.
John Fouché.
Here.
Bob Simonson. I haven't heard from Bob.
He's out of town.
Oh, okay. I'd like to welcome everyone to the June meeting of the Wastewater Technical Advisory Committee. On our agenda this evening, we have two technical memorandums to review. The first on our agenda is titled Solids Handling Options. The second will be Septage Receiving Station Option. Each item will first be introduced by the project team, then discussed by the TAC prior to taking public comment. It is important that everyone understands the difference between solids and septage. Solids are the dried or partially dried residue that comes out of the treatment plant, and depending on the level to which it is treated, it is either hauled to a remote landfill or composted for direct application to irrigable lands. Sorry. Septage is the semi-solid materials that accumulate in septic tanks or steg tanks and is pumped and hauled to a special receiving facility such as Santa Maria. So there is a difference between these two technical memos. Remember that the technical memos we discuss are responses by the project team to information requests or questions raised by the independent EIR team and do not imply that they have been chosen as components of the wastewater project. The TAC's task is to review, question, and comment and receive public input on the content of these technical memos, especially as it pertains to the effects we believe it might have on Los Osos. Those of you who might wish to comment during the public comment period should restrict your comments to the contents of the tech memo that we're discussing. And if you believe there is an alternative solution to the topic under discussion, you should submit that information directly to the project team at lowwp@co.slo.ca.us. And in order for us to get through our agenda and adjourn by 9:30, I need to ask you to abide by these simple rules. I would like to again remind everyone listening to us that this evening that water conservation is a critical assumption for the design of our wastewater facility, regardless of the technology adopted. Although the Board of Supervisors passed ordinances designed for retrofitting plumbing fixtures in the community, without voluntary water conservation by individuals, we will not achieve our... I'd like to add a few comments on the status of the ER and the revised out-of-town technical memo.
Chairman Garfinkel, I'm John Waddell with the Public Works Department. There's kind of three main areas that I'll give a quick update on. One is the draft environmental impact report, and Mark Hutchison will follow me in a second with that. Another is the engineering reports, the technical memos, and the third is the surveys, which are the direct input from the community. I'm going to start with the surveys. We recently retained a firm to start developing a community advisory survey. We have not put them to work yet, but that work will be ongoing this summer as we prepare for the community advisory survey, which is scheduled for after the draft EIR is released. We also are working on an initial survey of aerial photo survey, asking property owners for their preferred location for a potential step tank. This is important not only as an initial survey element and to gauge property owners' preferences on tanks and preferences toward potential impacts of septic tanks on their properties, but also as a preliminary design element of actually identifying where these tanks potentially go, which that information would then be available to potential proposers for a step collection system. On the technical memos, The process has been that we have released draft technical memos, brought them before your committee, and then received comments from both your committee and the public. And we recently released two final technical memos. Those were final based on input from your committee and the public. We also, with that, published all of the public comments that we received on those tech memos, as well as our responses to either the comments or the questions, clarifying questions and then responses to comments. And then those, of course, if there were questions that were pertinent to the tech memos, were incorporated in the technical memos. Another, some of the upcoming, well, the remainder of the tech memos need to be finaled. Some of the upcoming ones that we're still working on, one I want to highlight, one is the decentralized technical memo. On that one, that was one of the early ones released, but we have not released a final yet, and that's because we've been working with Pio Lombardo, who is the where the initial draft is of conveyance routes, and it shows potential conveyance routes, so the environmental team can do their analysis. It also looks at energy and construction costs. The sites that were considered were all the sites from the fine screening report. As Mark will explain in a minute, Mark will explain the reasons for this. We released this updated draft with potential conveyance sites to a potential treatment plant site at the Tonini property. So, and there are a number of alternative routes that are being considered for a potential treatment plant site at the Tonini property. So, with that, I'll turn it over to Mark, who can explain a little further the reasoning behind that, and they'll also give an update on the environmental work.
Thanks, John.
Mr. Chairman, members of the TAC, Mark Hutchinson, Environmental Manager with the Department of Public Works. Following up with John's comments on the revised out-of-town conveyance memo, you'll recall that during the fine screening report, we were careful to remind the TAC and the public that the EIR would cast a somewhat wider net on alternatives beyond what was in the fine screening report. And certainly there are sites that have been discussed previously and other EIRs that the current effort is looking at. But as we predicted, the ongoing work looking at out-of-town conveyance generated questions and another potential alternative for treatment plant. Previous projects or what current projects considered for east of town include, and even in-town sites, the concept of a spray field. We're calling the Tonini property. That's just generic for a number of properties east of town, as far east as Turi Road, as a matter of fact. And when the EIR team started evaluating those pipeline routes, it creates an obvious question, which is if you're going to build a pipeline from town out to a treatment plant and then a further pipeline out to a disposal site, what kind of impacts do you get if you simply move the treatment plant from the middle of the pipeline system to the other end? You'll recall that we have an alternative site, which is, shall we say, at the west end of that pipeline system at the Midtown site. So what the EIR team requested from the engineers was simply, for this potential alternative, we needed more information about conveyance routes to not only move simply treated effluent all the way to Tonini, but also look at the impacts of moving raw wastewater, probably in a predictable way. So that's kind of the logic. I think if you mention a treatment plant that far east, the first question that comes to your mind is why in the world would you do that? But if you follow the steps in project development and then understand that it begins with the concept that there, under many scenarios, would be a pipeline that long distance, then you need to take the next step and ask the question, well, what if we bracket that pipeline with treatment plants potentially at either end and at the points in between? That's kind of where the revised out-of-town conveyance memo comes from. You'll be able to see that. I think that's on the street now.
Yes.
Yeah, that's posted on the website. As far as EIR team or environmental activities, of course, the EIR team and our consultants continue to work on the document. We finished most of the field work. We're initiating some consultations, say, on the cultural side at the state and federal level. Which is a normal part of the process. I can report that we had a very successful interagency meeting last May 14th in Santa Cruz. Several of the agencies involved in the projects, those that have to give it permits and those that have authority over resources, sent representatives to the meeting, were able to interact with each other, talk about each agency's issues and perspective, give them a better sense of who's involved in the project and where the EIR is going, why certain topics are there, why some are emphasized over others. We view the idea of bringing the agency representatives together very beneficial. It's important that those folks talk to each other, that each one understands the other agency's perspective, areas of focus. We certainly don't want them to be getting in each other's way, so to speak, as the project, whatever alternative is selected, ultimately moves through the complex environmental permitting process. That's pretty much an update on where the EIR team is at.
Thank you very much for that report. Just one question, Mark, you may be able to. Are you still anticipating release of the draft EIR by the end of August or very early September?
I'm thinking at this point we continue to look at the schedule and try to balance meeting the original time schedule versus level of detail on issues that are coming up, questions that are being answered. There's a lot of digging on old documents. I think it's pretty certain we're going to slip the time frame beyond 1st of September. Could be as late as the end of that month or into October, for that matter. That's really
First item on our agenda is acceptance of the meeting, the minutes from our previous meeting. Has everyone on the committee present had a chance to look at those minutes? And if so, are there any changes, errors, or omissions? Seeing none, is there anyone from our audience who saw any errors or omissions? Seeing none, I'll seek a motion to accept the minutes of last month's meeting. Rob Scheib, thank you. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
Second, thank you. Right. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Opposed? Abstaining? One abstention. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
May I ask you and Mark Hutchison a question about these comments?
You may.
I was struck by the new information about the consideration of Donini as a
I'm on now. I'm struck by the new information on the possibility of a or consideration of a Donini site. So the first question I have is, will the information be provided at the same level as we saw when we looked at the technical memos on siting, such as the Giacomazzi and Brandon sites? Will that be contained in the out-of-town conveyance final draft? For example, size and the topography and the issues with respect to the quality of soil and drainage issues.
I'm not sure that the technical memorandum on out-of-town conveyance would have that information in it to that level of detail. I think if we look back at the fine screening report, the information that was provided on potential sites at that point certainly would not be in the out-of-town conveyance memorandum. If Tanini ends up being ultimately one of the fully analyzed sites, then the level of information would go above and beyond what we saw in fine screening for the others at Giacomazzi and Cemetery Brannan and those. So I guess I
have the same review. And if I look at our schedule, it doesn't seem to be part of our schedule either.
Right. Well, just in case, again, remind everyone that that revised technical memo was published. I think today was it was published, so you should have that revised. But if the committee believes that we want to vet that again in a public meeting, then we'll try to make room for it on our June 30th agenda. And I'll seek input from the committees if that's their choice. Rob,
Before we go to that step,
It would come out of, in the draft EIR, if Tanini becomes a viability, I mean, a project that you're going to look at, then that, because I believe out of the draft EIR, we're going to see projects coming out of that. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. And so if Tanini was one of those, then that would be one of the projects that I assume we would be looking at that time. Is that correct?
Oh, absolutely, yes. If the draft EIR includes full analysis of Tanini or even secondary analysis.
Okay. And so basically that would probably be the time when we would have a really good opportunity to go through Tanini with the amount of information that we had with the other locations, correct?
Partially correct. You'd have a lot more information than you had before.
We'd have as much information as we had at that point on the other properties. Because I assume we'd be getting more information on the cemetery property and more information on Giacomazzi and Brennan as well.
Right, correct.
Yeah.
And again, if those sites stay in there as top priorities, Tanini stays in there, then you would see a lot more information about all of those, but okay. at a co-equal level.
Okay.
I'd like to maybe ask you one question, Mark. We've been talking about different sites, different alternatives in these technical memos and in our public meetings. When the draft EIR is published, will all of those still be in it, or will some of them possibly be dropped because they didn't meet whatever test you're putting these alternatives to?
Oh, yeah. It's certainly possible that some of the alternatives that have been discussed would not be fully vetted in the EIR for one reason or another. Of course, that would be documented.
Then go to our item number 2 on the agenda, which is the first technical memo, and we're going to do a solids handling option. Remember, once again, solids are the residue after going through the treatment plant, and they are not what is found in septic or step tanks. And John, are you going to give us some input on this?
Yes, John Waddell once again. Thank you for the repeating that clarification. That was the first thing on my list to talk about, but you did an excellent job, so I'll skip right past that. And just a quick summary of the Solids Tech memo. And essentially, in the fine screening report, it gave a general review. It had a chapter on solids handling. The conclusion was that hauling subclass B solids to a disposal or recycling facility would be the least costly, most economical. However, we recognize that the solids handling is a small part of the total project cost, a small incremental cost. It's also independent of the other technologies that are selected. The one relation is if a pond is selected, then you're not removing solids on a regular basis, but only on a basis of decades. But so essentially, it's independent of the other options. So, recognizing that the community may want to go further in either treating their solids to a higher level, or using their solids for some type of beneficial reuse, we've developed this technical memo and essentially looking at those options. And on the beneficial reuse, The one thing that we looked at is energy production, and the conclusion there was up to about 1,000 kilowatt hours per day. So at kind of market rates, you're looking at a little over $100 a day in energy savings, which over the course of a year, adds up to $40,000-$50,000 potentially in energy savings. Also looked at the facilities that would be needed to recover that energy, and there's several million dollars of costs involved there. So, we'll have to look at the cost benefit of that, but the information is here in this technical memo. And the other beneficial reuse that is considered is composting, and a number of steps would be necessary to get to composting. Again, digestion, which would also be a technical memo. Then in the summary, looks at footprints, potential impacts of visual and odor, truck traffic, and also capital costs for these different facilities. And again, noting that that, like in the final table 7, most likely path to composting is going to be through one of the other, through one of the other options of digestion or solar drying. So you'd have to add those to reach composting. Essentially, though, this basically looks in more detail at the solids handling options. Does not address at this time operation and maintenance costs. The at this level, the O&M costs from the fine screening report are still the basis. On a side note, the project team is taking a close look at life cycle costs, revisiting the fine screening report, and working with our operators of wastewater systems in the county to vet and verify those estimates and fine-tune them as we move towards this fall and towards analyzing design-build potentially analyzing design-build proposals and really wanting to have a very high level of confidence in our O&M estimates. So that kind of summarizes that's kind of a quick summary of the tech memo, the reason behind it, and some of the conclusions. And be happy to answer questions or follow up your discussion with more clarification.
Thank you very much, John. Okay, with that, I'm going to bring it to the committees. Why don't we let engineering start? Do we have comments or questions from the engineering committee? John?
Yeah, John, I wanted to follow up. The purpose of this memorandum is to develop additional options beyond subclass B hauling, right? I mean, it's not that you've decided to use one of these three options. This is additional information for us to consider beyond and separate from the subclass B hauling option.
Well, all the options in this tech memo were also in the fine screening report. So they've already been on the table, but it is a higher level of detail.
The other options were independent of the volume biosolids being generated. Did I hear you say that right? Or
no, they're independent of the technology selected. In other words, regardless of the treatment technology collection system technology or the treatment technology, any of these options could be implemented.
Right, so you're not talking about volume differences at all. You're just talking about the applicability of the treatment system for biosolids, for the quality of biosolids that are being produced. That's what you're talking about. When I first heard you say that, I was thinking about the difference between gravity and step. There's an obvious difference in biosolids production. The O&M cost can be as up to can be as up as high as 40% of the O&M costs for the facility, depending on what treatment system and collection system that you select. So what you're talking about here was the applicability of these treatment systems for biosolids on the biosolids that have been produced.
Well. Yes, the volume is another issue, and in this tech memo, it has different volumes, whether it's a gravity system or a step collection system. But regardless, I mean, the biosolids handling, the solids handling option is not dependent on the wastewater treatment option. It is, in other words, if whether it's BioLac or oxidation ditch, you could still implement any of these biosolids handling options.
Right. And then you did mention ponding.
Now, ponding would be different, of course, right. Because there's really essentially
right.
very little biosolids. Well, there's no biosolids handling on a regular basis.
Right. So it's, you made a pretty broad statement. We already talked about three different exceptions there. So I just kind of wanted to, you're not trying to get anything biased. It's just that, type of a thing. I just wanted to make that clarification. Subclass B is not off the table. These things are just additional options that have been more fully described. You are looking at the difference between the collection systems, and then you did identify ponding as producing less of a volume there. So, That was basically what I wanted to address.
Russ?
A methane generator, which turns out to be something in the order of a few more dollars a day, that doesn't really help a whole lot. So there's a loss in terms of the capital investment. If you throw in the methane flare to boot and the additional higher structures you need for this, which would have a visual impact, my reaction is that this is a non-starter for the heat digester. Our committee some time ago, though, felt there was merit in looking at the aerobic digester, primary reason being that we can anticipate down the road that there might be a further restriction on the type of biosolids that could be exported, and hence it might be good to do a preemptive strike and be prepared for that with a lower cost investment that you would have with a aerobic digester. Some of that would be recovered perhaps by reduced tipping fees, but perhaps not. And so I think it would be more sense to me to focus the analysis on subclass B thickening and dewatering or class B with an aerobic digester. I think that would be I'd be interested to see if that is indeed cost-effective, what the cost would be to the community. And that was partly dealt with, of course, the fine screening report.
Thank you, Russ. Is there any other comments or questions from the Engineering Committee? Okay, with that, I'll take it over to the Environmental Group.
Yes, I have a number of concerns and questions. So, for some reason, these two technical memos just aren't clear to me. I understand the difference between the solids and the septage, but I get the distinct impression that we're trying to compare apples and oranges, and we're trying to push a circular peg in a square hole here, because really, both of these memos deal with the byproduct of the whatever system is selected. And for example, in the solids handling memo, it talks about going back to the fine screening report, and it talks about 5,000 dry solid pounds a day for a traditional system and 1,000 pounds for a step system. And it refers, it just seems to me that it's stated as fact. So I would personally like to have some additional discussion included in the final memo as to where those two numbers come from. I'm not saying they're wrong. I'm not saying they're right. I just don't understand. So I think that's an issue that needs clarification in this memo of where the 1,000 and 4,000 come from, rather than just referring back to the fine screening report.
Well, and as we're talking, I can try to go through the fine screening report and see what I can find. My recollection is that, really the source of these numbers are from engineering computer models that model treatment processes. So it's... can't really reproduce it in a report, but...
And I have no problem with that, but if we could have documentation or how the modeling was, what modeling it was that came up with these numbers. It's just not clear to me, and I'm reading it as a layperson, not as somebody that claims to be an expert in septage or solids handling. And it's just, I think for a person that doesn't have a knowledge in that area, we just need further clarification of what that number comes from. Because I have a hard time evaluating the number as being valid or invalid if I'm not understanding how it came about. So that's just a question of clarification that I would like to have included in the future. And then that gets to the second part, and this is where I think we're trying to push a round peg in a square hole, because we're looking at the total output for a traditional system, and I use that as the phrase, of 4,000 pounds dry. And we're looking at the output for the step stag system of being 1,000 solids, but also being, I think, 60,000 gallons of liquids from the septage each week, if I read this other report correctly. So I don't want anybody to get the impression that the total output from the system is either 4,000 or 1,000. It's 4,000 for the traditional system, but it's 1,000 plus the pumping of a tank every 4 or 5 years. So if we look at it as waste product, not either septage or solids, and use that terminology, we're talking about a significant impact that people need to be looked at as a combined impact. Because when we look at truck traffic trips, that was a mouthful, in table six here, I mean, it shows a one trip per week for the step system. But yet when you go over to the other technical memo, the septage memo, we're talking about 21 trips a week. So I just think these things need to be treated together rather than separately.
The septage handling is essentially part of the collection system process. And so those, whatever the number is, 60,000 gallons a day or whatever the exact number is of septage that would need to be collected from a step collection system, after it goes to the treatment plant, goes through the treatment process, it still results in approximately 1,000 pounds per day of biosolids. And I think kind of the intuitive reason behind that is because a lot of the solids break down in the septic tanks over a number of years, and then therefore are released, you know, as gas, and are not then in the treatment process down the road in the treatment plant, and therefore that's why the treatment process is smaller and has a smaller output of biosolids.
I think, and I'm not picking on staff or the person, but I think the septage report is much clearer in regard to what you just said, but I don't think the solids handling makes that clear that there is another component to the step system. I think that's really where I think the deficiency lies. The 1,000, 4,000 is not comparing end product. Mm-hmm. It's only comparing solid end product. Because the end product for the step is really 1,000 plus the septage, and that's my concern. If you just take the solids handling report as an isolated report, you're looking at a 4-to-1 ratio. If you look at it all combined together, you're not seeing that anymore.
Well, that's, I mean, right. And the solids handling report should not be taken as an isolated report. It's part of the whole thing. And, as we've gone through this process to be able to have things in manageable bites, we've broken it up into its components. I know that in the environmental impact report, it will have to consider the whole projects and look at projects as a whole.
I just have, from having done this for a while, I have a concern that people won't look at everything as an integral unit, but will pick out at each technical memo and try to analyze it or look at it and draw conclusions from just that memo. And that's why I think the hardest part of this job is to fit the whole thing together, which is your guys' job. But I just want to point out what I see as really a conflict here. And that's just my comment on that.
I think Rob has a comment on what you just said there, Marshall, also.
Just to add to the fun, in Table 5.1 of the fine screening report, there are estimates per fine screening report, 4,200 pounds, oxditch, 4,100 pounds for gravity, 1,100 pounds for step, footnoted that it includes 5 septic tanks per day.
I don't have mine with me, unfortunately. But
I had to get mine, yeah.
There's a paragraph up above that, or prior to that, that refers to it, the pumping of the step tanks not being included. And I'd have to have my report in front of me to...
Yep. Doesn't that imply what you just read, Rob, that we will have septage handling at the plant also to get that 1,000 pounds?
It implies it. Says the step stage collection system reduces the solids loading on the treatment facility since the septic tanks retain a significant portion. However, the septic tanks inside the prohibition zone will need to be pumped periodically with septage conveyed to the treatment facility. Septic tanks are assumed to be pumped once every 5 years with approximately 250 working days per year.
See, and that's where the confusion, I think, is coming in for me, because I go back to that paragraph, and it just doesn't seem to be consistent. And that's why I'm saying the septage solids handling is just not clearly, at least I'm not understanding.
Right, agreed. I think that's the source of the needed clarification. And to me, these numbers, just in looking at them in this table in the solids portion, are probably correct. It's in the treatment portion that I think there needed to be modification in this tech memo, and I think it does need to be pulled together and made clear. But I think for the solids handling, the fine screening report always included the septage receiving.
So, again, I'm sorry, Bill. But that prior paragraph, then the one that's the second down on the top of the right-hand side, which I have memorized its location, are you saying that that's in addition or not in addition to the 1,000? That's my question.
Not in addition.
So you're saying that is included in the 1,000?
According to the fine screen report, yes.
I would agree with that.
I would think that when you revise or you do the final on this technical memo, there ought to be, if nothing else, at least a footnote on the step saying that this requires septage receiving also in order for it, that 1,000 pounds to be a valid number for handling.
Well, I think, because that clarifies it in my own mind at least. Although I'm not sure that it's clear.
I guesstimate that to add it to those numbers.
Oh, sorry, footnote 2 in table 7.
Right.
To estimate that would be to look at the amounts in the fine screening report in chapter 7. But again, some of those are, there's basically a, there's a project cost. There's a project cost factor in Table 7, in Chapter 7 of the Fine Screening Report, and it's and then it's further broken down in the appendix in the basis of cost memorandum. But you know, they really, a lot of these costs are going to, and it's something like the solids handling with the treatment are going to be kind of part of the treatment process, and so.
Okay, no, thank you. That's, I can go back and take a look at that. Thanks.
Any other comments from the environmental group? Question? With that, I'll take it to the financial committee.
Okay.
Bob?
I just wanted to get one more clarification because we talked about basically the same type of thing that Marshall was talking about a little bit. And so in the solids, that includes the 5 tanks a day. But the treatment plant numbers do or do not include those 5 tanks per day?
In the fine screening report, when they ran the modeling for the treatment process, they did not account for the septage receiving. And so that is not in the treatment process. Now, when they looked at the solids handling. So they, in the fine screening report, the treatment process does not accurately reflect the septage handling. That's why it is addressed in the septage TM. The next one we're going to talk about talks okay. about impacts on plant size for okay. for septage receiving both from within Los Osos and regional on both treatment plants for a gravity collection system and a step collection system.
Okay. I just wanted to confirm that. We didn't have a whole lot of other questions on this. Basically, the O&M costs, because in the fine screening they had the O&M costs for Windrose, but I don't remember them seeing the in-vessel processes for in-vessel process for composting O&M numbers. Are they similar? Are they significantly different?
I have not had a chance to look into that. I think
traffic.
Yeah, you're referring to green waste for composting.
Yes.
And the truck traffic estimates in here are for once you have your compost for taking it from the plant, taking it away from the plant to where it's going to be used. I don't think the truck traffic for actually delivering green waste to the plant was estimated.
Okay, thank you.
Any other comments from the financial group committee? Then I think the committees have their comments. With that, we're going to open it up to public comment. Do we have some slips? Okay. Our first public comment is Keith Weimer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith Weimer. I don't have much to say, believe it or not, so I may get done in 3 minutes. Just a couple points. From the point of view of sustainability, obviously we want to try to use all these materials. There shouldn't be anything left over. So I'm wondering if two of the processes might be combined. I mean, recovery of some of the methane, but also it being a compost project as well, so that everything gets used to the maximum amount, you know, or benefit there. I also think there may be some way to combine these, you know, septage hauling as well as the solids issue. And I don't know a lot about this process, so Rob, I'm asking you, is there something, I've read about this, but something called, it's basically an injection process that where a sludge type material gets injected underground in like to fertilize like turf areas and so on. I heard that was a very cost-effective way to do things because what it does is it gets it away from the human contact. It's underground, and it fertilizes, you know, very fertilizer-intensive type of crops. And so it kind of works for maybe septage. I think it has to be treated to some extent, but then it deals with both issues because you don't take the water completely out.
Our next speaker is Don Bearden, followed by Frank Acilio.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. First of all, I'm for a ponding system. And the reason I'm for a ponding system is because then you can delay this sludge buildup and maybe 10 or 20 years before you even have to worry about it. Second of all, if you look on page 7 of this report, you'll find that if your septic tanks hauling can cause a big problem with your sludge because they can cause heavy metals to concentrate, and you could end up with, it says, a small treatment plant in Quincy, California, recently found that septic is receiving in just 0.5% of the total plant influent caused their metals concentration to exceed those allowed for Class A or Class B pollutant concentrations. So that's something we're really going to have to think about. And the third thing is, I'm wondering if anybody, I didn't see it in this memo, but has thought about pharmaceuticals residues. Do they end up in the solids? And is that supposedly a coming thing about what are treatment plants doing about pharmaceuticals? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frank Acilio, followed by Gail McPherson.
Frank Acilio, Los Osos. I want to follow up on Mr. Bearden's comments about ponding. I would have liked to have seen in this technical report what would be the cost after 20 years, an average actually per year. That would make it easy for me to do a comparison as a layperson, per year. Because that's what it has per trip, how many trips per week, what would be the average of the lifespan of the 20 years, so you spread that out as it was each year instead of at the end of the 20 years. I'd like to see that data. Also, the amount of trucks, the same data that you have here, but for ponding, and the cost. What would be the cost of the elimination of the remaining biosolids that would be there? So if that's something I'm requesting, thank you.
Thank you very much. Gail McPherson, followed by Chris Albee.
Putting this stuff into the soil. And that would require liquid hauling, which would be substantially larger, but might change the cost in the drying and some of the other things. But the treatment levels, Class A, Class B, fully digesting waste and things like that are important. I was involved in lots of contract negotiations and a lot of the hauling and disposal of solids. And so I also did quite a few technical reports on composting facilities from the East Coast all the way through the process, over a 10-year period. So I have a lot of information and knowledge on this, and for anyone to assert, and I've heard the public believe this, and I think we need to make it quite clear, there is no commercial benefit to Los Osos in, quote, selling their product. That is a separate business enterprise, and we shouldn't even go there. The liabilities and some of the issues with sludge are enormous. Go on any biosolids search, and you'll find huge issues. I'm glad that this technical memo did address some of those. In any kind of a cooperative regional program, I think that the county needs to look at that outside of this project, but concurrently, because that is needed for the entire region. Just as in the septic hauling, that is also a separate issue, and I'll bring that up later. But composting, commercial disposal, the issues of toxicity and metals, but mainly looking at our area and the site and the size is really an important issue, and I hope that you'll continue to ask questions and that I can provide some written comments as well. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I would once again want to just remind everyone we keep getting confused, or at least using the terms solids and sludge. This technical memo deals with the solids solids of the waste of the plant, and not with sludge hauling.
Could I just clarify? We're talking about biosolids, correct?
Solids out of the treatment plant.
Solids out of the treatment plant are called biosolids. That is is a term.
But not sludge.
And sludge is also an interchangeable term. Now, I know that if you would like everyone to use biosolids, maybe
that is, you know, what's removed from septic tanks, and that's essentially raw sewage prior to treatment.
Thank you. Chris Albee.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. They should have, this is great. They should have called this Everything You Wanted to Learn About Poo. And, okay, on page 2, first paragraph, they say your public perception and biosolids reuse are major drivers for higher levels of treatment. That's true until we learn how much it costs, then we don't hear about it again. Second paragraph, what in the world is a viable helminth ova? You really got me on that one. Okay, paragraph below that, process for further reduction of pathogens is known as FERP. And then below that, we get exceptional quality biosolids. So I'm assuming that we can get high-class poo if we just monkey with it a little bit more. Okay, we got page 3 here. The process to significantly reduce pathogen is known as PSERP, which is awful close to FERP, which gets a little confusing when you read it. Let me read it along here. And then we've got vector attraction. Yes, there is such a thing as attractive poo. And then we've got the incorporating the sludge into the soil after application. So soil mixed with poo doesn't attract vectors. I don't think that's, somebody should look into that. Okay, page 4, another neat word, silvicultural. I don't think that one's even in the dictionary. Okay, oh, this is a good one here. biosolids of less than 75% moisture shall not be applied during periods when the surface speed exceeds 25 miles an hour. That's to be determined by the nearest calibrated regional weather station. The weather guy is going to love that, measuring wind velocity over poo all day. This is the best sentence. Biosolids application projects less than 40 acres are deemed non-Chapter 15 WDRs with a Category 3 threat to water quality rating and a Category B complexing rating. Biosolids project consisting of more than 40 acres are deemed a Category 2 threat and a Category B complexity rating. If you know what that says, you are a real engineer. You have graduated.
I did have a chance to review the fine screening report in my sidebar over there. And I do think that if you have the proper understanding and perspective on reading the language in the fine screening report, that it's clear what we're talking about, but I still don't think in a technical memo it's clear. So I do think that it needs to be clearly stated that the 1,000 pounds does include the septage from the step-stag tanks, because I don't get that feeling even going back to the fine screener report. I see now from talking to Rob on the sidebar there that that is the intent, and that's what that 1,000 pounds include. But I would encourage staff to make that entirely clear in this technical memo, that the 4,000 is the total output of the traditional system, and 1,000 does include the septage. That, I think that concludes my comments on that issue.
Rob? Chair, just a couple of comments. Sludge injection, just a brief comment that there is that interim biosolids ordinance out there that limits any future land application of biosolids in San Luis Obispo County. I think there's a copy of that somewhere in the documentation. If not, I can get you one. In terms of the cost estimates for the pond system, those are on page 522 of the fine screening report, and they estimate every 20 years $600,000. And then I'll have some more comments under septage when we talk about metals.
Thank you. Rob?
And I just wanted to comment on Don's comments. My understanding was that the primary source of metals in sewage is from industrial facilities, and so we can reduce the risk of heavy metals by only accepting septage from non-industrial septic tanks. Is that correct?
John?
That's our understanding, that that is the primary source is from, would be from industrial facilities. That's correct.
Just a brief note, as a septage hauler, we get involved in this issue. If you want to take septage to Santa Maria from a commercial source, they'll often come out and inspect your operations there before they'll accept that, and they'll do grab samples and so forth. So people who do receive septage often have to be very vigilant from industrial and commercial sources.
Thank you. Is there any other comments from John?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of echo, any program where we would grind it up and sell it as hog fuel to incinerator. Well, one of the things that happens is when you incinerate things, it reduces the volume of material down to ash. And if you had any sort of paint on there that had certain heavy metals, then that could render it as a hazardous material. If you do ever get into that hazardous material issue, then there's a whole wide range of liabilities that could be associated with that. So any kind of treatment, you have to look at this unintended consequence of concentrating an undesirable element.
Thank you, John. Any other comments from? Okay, then I'll take it to the next item on our agenda, which is the technical memo on septage receiving station option. This is a long one memo, and so I'll let John go ahead and introduce it to us.
Thank you, John Waddell again. This is a long memo with many tables, but I'll try to keep it brief. The septage receiving septage receiving is likely going to be necessary for septic tanks within the Los Osos community. If assuming a gravity collection system, there are still the outlying areas outside the prohibition zone that would still need septage removed from their septic tanks. And then assuming a step collection system, there would essentially be the same amount of septic tanks that currently exist. So kind of going on the assumption that some level of septage receiving will be necessary in a potential treatment plant, and therefore then the facilities would have to be there. The question that was posed early in the county, in the project development, was what about then accepting septage from outside the community as a potential, and basically having a potential revenue source for the project, and to that would pay for itself and potentially reduce project costs to the community. And we also recognizing that there is no regional septage facility in our county. A large part of the septage goes to a facility in Santa Maria. So this technical memo looked at essentially four scenarios, two for gravity and two for step. And so for gravity, it was looking at only receiving septage from within the Los Osos community. And then there was a scenario of looking at receiving septage from throughout the county. In the fine screening report, they did not, in their modeling of the treatment process, did not factor in septage receiving. So when they modeled the treatment process for this technical memo, they saw that that receiving septage has an impact on the treatment plant size. Septage is small volume compared to the total wastewater coming in. You're receiving, you know, over 1 million gallons a day of wastewater, and you're only receiving a few thousand gallons a day of septage. But the strength of the septage is much greater strength. So you need more capacity in your treatment process because you need more time for the septage to be broken down by the treatment process. So it's even though you're only adding a little bit more volume, you're adding a lot more potency and strength, BOD, so then you need a larger treatment process. Because the influent from a step collection is much lower strength than from a gravity collection system, it's a bigger impact. Looking back at the fine screening report, a treatment plant for a step collection system is significantly smaller than the treatment plant required for a gravity collection system. So even with factoring in the impacts of accepting septage, even regional septage, a treatment plant based on a step collection system looks like it would still be smaller than the treatment plant based on a gravity collection system. With a step collection system, if it accepted regional septage, treatment plant size had to double. Well, it was still less than half the size of, according to the fine screening report, less than half the size of a gravity collection plant. So while the impact is a big percentage increase on a step collection system, on a treatment plant based on a step collection system, it's still, the overall treatment plant sizes are still relatively in the same ballpark. The conclusions of this tech memo, after looking at the many different scenarios, the volumes generated, the frequency of pumping, and then the costs associated with increasing the capacity of the treatment plants, and also the regional, installing a septage receiving station, the numbers did not work out Potentially, before this, early in the project development if it's something that ultimately still, the community still wants to pursue, it really have to take a hard look at how to make that pencil out. So it's kind of this is one tech memo that did the analysis is done, and it's a pretty strong conclusion that the costs certainly outweigh the potential revenue.
Thank you very much. Any questions directly to John? Then, if not, we'll start again. Engineering, you have comments, questions, et cetera?
Basically, just comments. The conclusions of the report kind of speaks for itself. If this is such a good deal, why aren't other wastewater facilities in the county pursuing this potential business opportunity? Weighing in also the potential for product liability, if we were talking about concentration of metals, that sort of thing, the potential risk that it has to the community financial-wise from that kind of a liability. And then the other more important thing is this project, the wastewater project, has a 30-year history, and it is adding another project, a Me Too project, in my mind, adds a whole set of other issues that could potentially get in the way of finding and selecting and permitting and constructing a sustainable wastewater program. The wastewater program we have right now is archaic, and it's failed with the nitrate concentrations and the resulting seawater intrusion talking about septage receiving, it just doesn't seem to make sense. It just we should focus in on the task at hand, which is implementing a sustainable wastewater system, whatever that may be.
Thank you. Any other comments from the engineering group? Russ?
Just a quick one. Really, it comes down to an investment by the community and possibly a conflict of affordability. And I think John Waddell's summary, as well as John Brady's summary is, and the report summary is correct. But I'll add one other thing to it. I've learned from for this community to invest dollars to increase the size of the septage receiving facility, as well as expansion of the treatment plant with expectation of a profit in an environment where things outside of our control, regulations in particular, can change quickly, is a gamble that I could not recommend to this community.
Thank you very much. Any other comments from engineering? Environmental, then?
I think that we would just like to second what's previously been said. I think John's summary, the report summary, John's summary, and especially the last cautions placed on investing in such a project are well fit. So I think that the summary is the summary, and it just leaves it the way it is. So I think everybody's in agreement, at least up to here, on that.
Any other comments from environmental? Then, okay. Financial?
Okay. I guess we're here to throw a wrench in the works. When AB 885 goes into effect, whether by the state or by the regional water boards, according to the estimates that we're in here, currently septic tanks in Los Osos are being pumped once every 10 years, and they'll have to go to once every 5 years. And so that's going to generate a whole lot more. And I would assume that the rest of the county would be under the same situation. And I would assume the whole entire area that is currently sending septage to Santa Maria will now be pumping twice as often. And Santa Maria can't take septage at certain times of the year. So if we end up with a step system, I don't see how we could not build septage receiving if we see AB 885 going into effect, because then there's a large possibility that in 5 years we would be in a position where we would have all this septage and nowhere to put it.
Rob, let me just interject something here. Although 885 has not been adopted yet, recently the Regional Water Quality Control Board has backed off on the 5 year.
Okay.
Because of I think one of the reasons is just what you're saying, there's no place to put it.
Okay.
And so now it's become recommended every 5 years rather than required.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. Because that was my primary concern with this, was just the 5 to 10 year change. And then just following along that line.
I'm assuming, I shouldn't assume anything, right? On page page 6 on gravity, low pressure, you talk about the build-out 749 septic tanks within Los Osos that would remain. My first question is, would that require a septage receiving station to handle it, to get it into the plant? I'm assuming you're going to handle it in the plant. So does it require a septage receiving station to screen it and to remove foreign objects? And also, have there been any discussion? I know there's no financials on this, but would that be a revenue or something to the plant?
So you're talking about from the septage coming from within the community.
The prohibition
zone.
And
that also relates kind of to Rob's comments, too. Whereas the regional septage receiving, appears that most likely would not be feasible economically. Septage receiving from within the community, especially in the event of a step system, because there would still be a large amount of septic tanks in the community, that as part of the treatment process and as part of providing treatment and basically maintaining responsibility for the wastewater in the community, that the septage receiving station would be provided for community septage. So essentially, in whether it's gravity or step, you know, it's potentially likely that there would be septage receiving for the community. Kind of the question, and that was seems to be answered in this tech memo, is that regional septage receiving is not economically
right.
feasible.
But that, so we would have to have one, at least a septage receiving station to accommodate the 749 outside the prohibition zone septic tanks set. And then would there be revenue generated from that?
Well, it's the revenue, essentially that would be a project cost, would be part of project treatment.
But those people aren't paying envisioned. For the, aren't part of the 218, so how do we account for that?
So the, for the receiving septage from
this
areas
for the 749,
outside.
Yeah.
You know, it's in this, it's discussed in this tech memo. I think Rob might have some input, but I have to look
Rob.
Back and see.
You can help me. Go ahead.
Sure. Independent of the tech memo, because I don't remember how it was addressed, there was a lot of discussion in previous discussions about
what was given by the committees. Then with that, we will go to a public comment. And I have only three requests here to speak. Keith Weimer, followed by Gail McPherson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Keith Weimer. And thanks, TAC, for expressing the public's concerns about taking on other sludge and, or let's see, let me get the term right, septage. It is something we definitely don't want to take on. Sustainability-wise, you don't take the poisons out of the ground, and obviously we don't want to take somebody else's, because if we hope to get near sustainability with this project, we certainly want to try to eliminate that aspect of the project. And I'd like to take it just one step further. I think we actually need the money back from the TM, because this was really a more of a county issue than a Los Osos issue. And I'll add to that I think even imported water is more of a county issue. So this was a 95-page deal, so I don't know how much per page that is, but we should get that back. That shouldn't be part of the $6 million, or however much we've spent so far. let's see. And I was just going to ask the same thing that Mr. Garfinkel did about how the costs are offset when other people are using septage. So thanks for that, covering that one. I wanted to point out on page 7 that I have some real concerns about the way they came up with the volume of septage for the step stay. If you notice in the footnote, it says number of tanks. This is number 2 and number 1 also. But number of tanks times 1,500 gallons per septic tank, and that's the annual septage pumped. Well, why are we talking about 1,500 gallons being pumped? I mean, we have an effluent situation here. All the water gets pumped off. That's what the effluent pumps are all about. Am I missing something? I want to also point out that 8/8 water line to the bottom of the tank. If I'm reading that correctly, it means possibly that the sludge we're talking about, not the sludge, but the septage, might only be 25% of that volume. So we could be talking about a 75% error here. I'm not sure, but let's take a look at that. Already? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gail McPherson, and we'll answer questions after. Gail McPherson, followed by Don Bearden.
Okay, I'll follow on Keith again. I think that the he made a very good point about who this this tech memo really belongs to and who it really benefits. And certainly, my first question was the base case scenario is no septage receiving station. Most other communities that have wastewater treatment plants don't haul their own community's septage to their own facilities. They haul it to Santa Maria. And so, but the septage haulers haul it wherever they choose to, whatever is available to them, and that's their choice. And so the base case is really no receiving station. The second level, the second order there, is to say, yes, okay, we've got 660 or 700 septic tanks that need pumping, and again, based on when that might be corrected, would that be useful to put that septic tank receiving station in? Maybe not, maybe not. But if you do, what's the size of it? And so, really, I think that the first question you need to ask is, do you need it at all? Second, can you avoid putting it in? And if you can, do it. If you want to add it later, go back and do it. But I don't see that it's even required. And then I went ahead and made some written comments about the whole issue on a decision tree, the whole issue on the septic receiving station, and the tanks themselves. And the step tanks are much larger than the typical on-site tank, as I understand it. And they don't get, they're for a different purpose. They're not an on-site tank that's under AB 885. If it is going to be considered under AB 885, then you need to correct those volumes, because I understood from the other memos that they were larger tanks. And then I had another, let's see what my other concerns were that haven't been covered by you guys. Certainly gas and hauling costs are going to raise the amount of sludge that's actually coming out of those tanks, not being the total volume of the tank. And I think that's it. I just will turn in the comments that I had. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have Don Bearden, followed by Chris Albee.
Don Bearden, if we put in a gravity system, we don't need a septic receiving station. The people in the prohibition zone should not have to pay for a septic receiving station for those outside the prohibition zone in Los Osos or for the rest of the county. If a regional septic receiving station is desired, then the county should go for another 218 vote for to let those people who want it pay for it. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And our final speaker is Chris Albee.
Chris Albee, CDO number 1019. Moving right along here on page 5, at the top there. Okay. With people pouring into California, State Assembly Bill 939 mandates a phased reduction in waste sent to the landfills. I think that's going to be kind of tough to do. This is a bureaucracy at its finest. Less less poo and more people. At okay, the sentence below that, San Luis Obispo County data last in 1999 showed sewage solids is compromising 0.0% of a total tonnage of 160,000 tons per year of landfilled commercial waste. Well, at that percentage, we sure can't decrease it. Apparently, we have magic poo that doesn't exist, and it's invisible. And so, why would we want to get rid of 0.0% tonnage? You got me. Now, page six, under co-disposal, evidently, if you pile a lot of poo in one spot from everyone, it eventually turns into oil shale. Energy problem solved. That's all I've got.
Well, okay, we have Richard Markinson.
Section in it that talked about septage receiving from outside the prohibition zone and how that cost the factor. It did, okay. I don't have it with me, but I think there is a section in there, if I remember right.
Thank you very much. Lawson Schaller.
Good evening to everyone. Lawson Schaller. I want to thank the TAC members for their efforts. Also, the county staff for coming out. quick comment on the septage pumping cycles. I was at the water board hearing. I know Bob Simonson was there. It's not too bad. It's too bad he's not here now to comment on that. You'd mentioned, Bill, that capacity was an issue on the 5 years, and I think that was one of their concerns. Another concern, and I think it's an important point, is the science behind it. And I think Keith alluded to that in the 885, that there needs to be some way to measure the need to pump other than just simply time. The systems vary in the amount of their use and maybe more importantly, the amount of abuse they go through. So I think that's an important consideration, is that science should be taken into account. And anyone that is outside the PZ and plans on continuing to operate under septic tank and leach field or leach pit should keep their eyes peeled to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, because they are going to meet again to decide on this. And it, as you pointed out, it is a recommended right now, but that may become a requirement. Thanks.
Thank you very much. And our last speaker is Rachel Rosenthal.
Are we supposed to address you first? Are you president or chairman?
you can just proceed.
Okay. Thank you, Tay. Okay. I would just like maybe the TAC before you end, you could sum up and clarify the difference between the regional septage and septage that handles for our community, and one, maybe ask Gail or whoever, if we serve our own septic needs, or Rob, whatever we build can serve our septage needs in our community. For example, if we know what these hurdles are, we are all familiar now with the hurdles to get the plant built and community acceptance, and that Zone I septage with its trucks and outside outliers, strangers coming in to our little safe place, traffic on Los Osos Valley Road, the air quality, the carbon footprint of hauling sludge for the community from wherever they're going to bring it in. I mean, I hope that you can summarize your TAC with this and make a very strong. I hear from you that you all have grave concerns with this, the foreign matter in our pristine little sewage system, our residential, that we're going to be putting, I mean, into our basin, the water, possibly. So I want to know about the process where you guys can, when you perhaps hit on something that someone more knowledgeable would have screened out, perhaps, in a rough screening even, and that you guys can go, whoa, this, like, we don't know what the screen's made of, that this came to, and not have to waste our money or the county's money on further considering this and making the EIR process too burdensome, because there really are going to be some decisions. And this one seems so clear.
Can you sum it up, Rachel? Thank you very much.
Yes. And then the same thing about sludge, reducing the amount of sludge as a priority. If at some point, last time.
Thank you very much. Okay, there were some good questions and comments. Who would like to, Rob, you can go ahead and field some of them.
Just a couple of comments. First on Keith Weimer and others' comment on the 1,500-gallon septic tank. That is big, larger than a normal septic tank. And I think it does bear asking, you know, if perhaps by calling other folks who have step systems, who have tanks of that size, you know, when the pumper gets on site, does he activate the pump, pump it down to the low float, and then pump the tank, and then what volume is associated with that, I think would be a prudent call to make to see what procedures are there. That's what we would do if we were rolling on site, so I think that that's a good consideration. There are quite a few larger community tanks, you know, for mobile home parks and septage. If we choose to take our own septage. So we don't have to expand that out. If there's other perspectives on that, feel free to mention them. I'm aware of no requirement that we do that. So those are my comments.
Marshall.
The environmental, we have a question as a committee here. This has come up. Gail brought it up, and now Rob brought it up again, and it came up before. Does the treatment plant, if we have a step system, have to take our own septage? I mean, that's a question that we just need an answer to. I don't know the answer, but it's come up that if we choose to take it, can we not take it?
John, you want to answer that?
I don't think that's decided. You know, that there could be, I think it could go either way, where the treatment plant is built to not accept septage. That could potentially happen. It seems like where the previous project and was that they were going to accept septage from within the community because it was a local, you know, it was close by, but I don't think it's been decided.
Then I think that needs to be clarified, that that's an option, not mandatory, because my impression up till tonight was that we had to take our own septage.
You know, we might have to go back and look at previous permit conditions,
I just think that's an issue that, mm-hmm. I mean, that's a really deep issue that needs to be clarified, I think. Mm.
Rob, you have a comment on that?
Oh, I was just going to state that I think looking at the overall sort of ecological footprint on the thing, if hauling it to Santa Maria, how that balances with, you know, receiving it locally for those folks inside the prohibition zone.
Right. I'm not questioning which is better environmentally. I'm just questioning, is it an option?
Correct. I believe it is.
Okay.
Thank you. John.
One of the things I think we got to keep in mind is, you know, any location where we're going to put this treatment plant is going to have neighbors. There's always going to be somebody who lives closest to it, you know, whether that's a mile away or right next door. So I think we have to kind of be aware of that, and trying to add a commercial enterprise, is just not advisable. We want to try to minimize odors, minimize the visual impact, minimize the truck traffic that's going to that facility. I think those should be.
Thank you. Any other comments from the any of the committees or from staff? Okay. Well, then we're getting along quite well tonight. That concludes our discussion on technical memos. And then with that, I'm going to open it up to general public comment. Do I have any slips for that? Okay. You'll have to excuse me. The timer is working backwards today, so it starts out with nothing. When your light turns green, that means you have 1 minute left. When it turns orange, you have 30 seconds left. So I'm not sure why it's doing that, but I'm not going to fiddle with it. Okay, we'll start off. Our first general comment is from Tom Rohr, followed by Keith Weimer.
I'm Tom Rohr, resident of Los Osos. According to Fugro West 2004 report, the 30 gallons per square foot of water per day represents 48 inches of water per day. Morro Bay received a record of 8.82 inches of water for the entire month of March 1959. The proposed infiltration rate of Broderson is 5.5 times the maximum total rain for the month being applied every single day. The previous sewer project in 2001 called for 7 gallons square foot per day equals 11 inches every day. That's the same as a tropical rainforest. Despite spending millions of dollars on these studies, the engineers continue to make the same errors because they're using the same wrong information. This EPA 1981 manual, page 8-2, was the wrong one to use. The AB 885 draft recommends a maximum rate of only 1.2 gallons per square foot per day. That's equal to about 2 inches of water, 1.9. However, the EPA manual for 1980, page 4, table 7.2, says coarse sandy and gravelly soils are not suitable for recharge. Fine loamy sand should not exceed 0.8 gallons of water per square foot per day. This corresponds to an application of only about 1.2. Instead of trying to eliminate it during the sewage treatment process, it makes more sense to work with nature and allow plant vegetation to utilize the nitrogen for growth. In the past 2 years, the price of nitrogen fertilizer has increased fivefold. This makes nitrogen in agriculture a gold mine. We must not waste water. Nitrogen as a plant nutrient is too valuable to eliminate, and we must be reasonable water application rates to prevent any liquefaction. The ERR must address this, and I will pass out my comments.
Thank you very much. Our next speaker is Keith Weimer, followed by Frank Acilio.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to cover some of the responses to my input on the low-pressure collection system, and I would ask that you guys look at it too, please, and especially with regard to the response to number 3, number 5, and number 9. And I'm going to go over them real quickly. When I asked about a cluster step system, this was the answer. Regarding step systems for a cluster of homes, it is not likely that cluster step systems would be approved by regulators due to issues regarding owner responsibility for discharges to the system. Think about that. The SWRCB staff has indicated that low-interest loans would not be made available for systems using cluster step-stake systems. However, this condition may be negotiable if there are a few situations that require cluster systems. Moving forward with a system utilizing primarily cluster systems would pose substantial regulatory financing risk. First question I have is that a standard for the state water quality state water resources control board that we're going to be responsible for our discharges? Because if that is, I'd like to know if when there's an overflow of a gravity system, if there is one, they're going to identify whose sewage that was, and they're going to pursue it. Because if we have a community system here, it better not be that there's some personal responsibility for what's happening with those discharges. Secondly, I want to know if the county is planning on not reviewing certain alternatives because there's a financing risk. Have they set the criteria that just an SRF loan is the only way we can get this funded? Another point, when I asked about how many grinder pumps there would be and whether that would be reviewed, the response was that there would be 200 pumps and that this is an EIR decision because there are a lot of negative impacts associated with grinder pumps. So that needs to be looked at. And lastly, I asked about the grinder pumps with regard to the energy. And they said that, well, grinder pumps and step-stake pumps were assumed to be one-half horsepower. And they said that that would be worked out in the design-build process. So in other words, what I want you to, let me just finish this point, it's very important. What I want you to consider is that that won't be until after the EIR process and the community survey. And that's a big energy difference, a half horsepower versus at least a horsepower and a half. So that needs to be dealt with right now, not later. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Frank Acilio, followed by Don Bearden.
Frank Acilio, Los Osos. I want to get your attention to the screen. As you see, there's a house there with sandbags in the backyard. And notice the shrub in the back. Can you go to number 2, please? You notice that all of a sudden there's a kind of a big dig out. There's more water. The sandbags now are even muddier than they were. Can you go to number 3, please? You notice the this is the beginning of the number 2, where the gentleman was digging out the sand that was washed down. Now, if you notice up above, that's Cabrillo Estates up there. This is in the 400 block of Highland. And I've talked about the flooding issues before. So I'm going to leave this here for a few seconds. The problem is that the flooding that year
affected not only this home in the high end of the 400 block of Highland, the upper end, it affected homes in the 300 block. There's a home right now trying to negotiate with the original homeowner who had the flood in because they have deterioration on their foundation and they have some mold issues there because their house water went right through it. In the 700 block, I recall, the house on the upper side flooded. The water went right through the house. The house on Bayview Heights in Highland, where you see it's being remodeled close to the fire station, that house had over 3 feet of water in it. So that hillside, well, my concern is that, there's one more picture of the, can you flip the number four, please? This is the result of the flood. It actually went into the house. They have sandbags there, but didn't do any good. So this house got flooded inside as well. So that's a lot of sand and water that came down off that hillside. Now, if you strip away, get the environmental people, you know, to look at that flooding issue, those people. The other issue is the water. The other night I heard on a CSD that, you know, it's not really people who have wells don't use a lot of water or it's not worth going after them. Well, I'm not asking to go after them. I'm asking to do a 218 district-wide that would take care of purifying the water from either buying land for wetlands, for ejection wells, because in the own county's report, and you've seen this report, this was the one they gave to July.
Finish, please.
Okay. In July, they show that the combined with agricultural irrigation and domestic wells use a third of the basin. So hopefully they'll be included.
Thank you very much. Don Bearden, followed by Gail McPherson.
Don Bearden, Los Osos. Diesel fuel and gasoline are now over $4 or $5 a gallon. Time we get this project on the line, it could be $10 a gallon. With the cost of this fuel going up faster than you can shake a stick, I think we need to consider this in picking any project that is going to be running trucks around here and yon. If we put in a gravity collection system with a ponding system, we don't need a septage receiving station. And we also probably don't need to truck sludge except maybe once every 10 to 20 years. Maybe we better be rethinking what we want to put in. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Gail McPherson, followed by Lisa Schicker.
Hi. Every time I see sandbags, all I think about is snail habitat, Frank. I'm sure those in the hallway of that house were not going to be found to be that. I'd like to see that the questions, many of the questions tonight in the general comment have to do with Broderson as part of that disposal technical memo, and that really overshadows the rest of the valuable information in that technical memo. But I would really like to see the questions answered as soon as possible in writing. I've been looking at the website each day to see if maybe the questions that I raised and Citizens for Clean Water raised are going to be answered. These are questions that were raised first, at least that I'm aware of, by the Los Osos Technical Task Force back in 2003, packaging of other information and saying, oh, well, they said it was okay, so we're clear. No. The last person who says it is going to be held responsible for doing it. And I'd like to see that on an engineering firm for a change. Anyway, there was also some confusion with the low-pressure technical memo, and I had some questions that I came across from Mike Saunders, who I happened to have the pleasure of meeting in Port Charlotte in Florida when I visited my mother. And I got to tour the system and look at what he had there. The bottom line is that he asked a lot of questions, and then he's had a follow-up letter to John Waddell. And I'd like to see those answered. He has many questions. An example is the comparison of a pump, the grinder pumps to the step system, which seems inappropriate. And it is confusing to people because they think they're comparing a step collection system with a grinder system. And in fact, what you're doing is you're comparing a gravity system with grinders to a grinder system with no step collection process at all. There's an item that he brings up that's quite obvious. It's a half horsepower, 120 volt grinder pump that's compared at $400. They gave actual costs. I guess Orenco gave you guys actual costs, and that when you look up that half horsepower grinder pump, doesn't even exist in the industry. So there's some real problems here, and I think that these need to be dealt with. There's a whole packet of information that he has supplied that add to the questions. Clarify that technical memo so that we're looking not at a step versus grinder, but just strictly a grinder pump tech memo.
Thank you very much. Lisa Schicker, followed by Rachel Rosenthal.
Good evening. Good evening. My name is Lisa Schicker. I'm a Los Osos Community Services Director. And before that, I was part of the Los Osos Technical Task Force, which went into depth on the old project and developed a few technical reports as to why we thought the project was flawed. The biggest thing that happened with the old EIR, and I want to address this to you as well as the technical consultants who are working on this, was that the old EIR was produced before the technical reports were produced. That was a huge flaw, a huge, huge mistake. It caused a lot of problems. Because how could you get your technical information after you already produced your analysis? It didn't make any sense. They were in a hurry. They were getting shoved and pushed. Don't do that again. We cannot afford to do that again. We're doing area, and you must redo energy. All of those have to be tossed, and they have to be redone completely. So far, all we've seen is a rehash. That's a big mistake. That's why my board, which is made up, really, when we did this, of environmental and engineering professionals, rescinded the statement of overriding considerations for the old EIR. We had to do it. The reasons for making those overriding considerations were based in nothing. They were based in invalid conclusions, and so that's why we did that. That's where it stands today. I wanted you to know that. It's very important. And then finally, I just have an article that I'd like to share. It's called Everything You Know About Water Conservation is Wrong. It's a new article about what's called virtual water, and it's kind of fun to read. It's just a different approach of how we use water in America and including our community and how you can really calculate how much water you use. And I just wanted to share it with the community. So is it to you, Mr. Garfinkel, or to?
We'll give it to me, yes.
Okay. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Rachel Rosenthal, followed.
Rachel Rosenthal, Los Osos. I wanted to also echo Dr. Rohr's comment about the nitrogen, and I also want to apologize for not sending more communication. I read the rough and fine screenings produced by Corolla several times and took notes, but I want to be positive, but the quality of the research is, I mean, Russ, you brought up the lack of footnoting. I found that when there are sources, they're old, where there has been substantial amounts of research that has followed and changed the findings of the articles that are cited. I think sometimes it's being done by an intern in an engineering office, so I apologize that it makes it very difficult. And I bring that up regarding nitrogen. I think I found math mistakes just on the pounds formula when it was in the rough or fine screening about how much they gave an example, typical amount of water that would be from to be recycled for ag exchange and how much nitrogen that would be to the land. And I think there were, I hate to sound picky, but there were math mistakes. The whole assumptions of the various fertilizer institutes and ag institutes are that it's the nitrogen usage that is not only it's the greatest energy use on the farm, and that accounts when you have so many kilowatt hours. They equate it all down to kilowatt hours to make it comparable. Kilowatt hours per acre or by crop versus kilowatt hour. The greatest was the use of the fertilizers. And I have a statement I'm going to send you from the head of the Fertilizer Institute that about other impacts, but I'm running out of time. So that is what I wanted you to look at more in but also I really want you to answer about the process, how your group can come up with a conclusion or a decision and put weight behind it and send it to the county.
Thank you very much, Rachel. And our last speaker is Lawson Schaller.
Good evening again, Lawson Schaller. I feel compelled to comment on Brodersen. It still remains, obviously, a very controversial subject, and it really needs to be addressed. I think that will put some minds at ease, and I think it'll save a lot of time in the process. And I look forward to the EIR consultants to take a professional, independent look at the science. It needs to be clarified. I am relying on that EIR firm to protect the community. I appreciate their presence. I've seen them at Board of Supervisor meetings and here at TAC meetings, and I appreciate that, and I hope they can hear the message tonight because that does need to be addressed. On a more general note, I've always valued coming to these TAC meetings. I felt it was an opportunity to hear back and forth, discussion, dialogue. A lot of questions were asked at the podium. I think Rob's and staff and TAC members have always done a good job of answering them or trying to answer them. That's always been really valuable to me. We need a venue to air things out and get questions answered. Last TAC meeting, I was a little disappointed. I'd asked some questions. And the more that we can air these things out, I think the more likely we're going to get consensus, which is what we really need when there's so much division on some issues and when we can really get some science on the table and get some objective opinions. I think we can resolve a lot of these issues. So I've been to the Board of Supervisor meetings, and I've been told that it's premature for dialogue there, and you know the format there. It's really not probably appropriate for a lot of back and forth. I think this is a great venue to do that. So whenever possible, I think the more of that, the better. And I know it's time-consuming for you guys, but it's valuable for me and I think others, probably a lot of people at home too. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Is there any responses or comments from John?
Yeah, just I just wanted to follow up. Dr. Rohrer and Ms. Rosenthal brought up the fact that nitrogen is, you know, a valuable commodity. And I know over at the Colonial Pass Water Treatment Plant, you know, we've been purchasing chemicals, and there's been a huge escalation in the cost of chemicals. And so one of the things that I wanted to tie into some of the things we talked about last time with the Agriculture Exchange Program. The wastewater effluent TDS was estimated about 620 milligrams per liter, which was based off of the average drinking water TDS concentration plus 200 milligrams per liter pickup. And what I wanted to point out is that's based off of current water quality in our drinking water supply, where the water purveyors are actively shifting pumping from the lower zone, which has a higher TDS concentration, to the upper zone, which has a much lower TDS concentration. So it's setting up a situation where the effluent may, in fact, have TDS less than the groundwater below the agricultural area that they're using right now, which is about in the mid-500s. So when you look at that effluent quality of having a lower TDS than what's being used right now, and the added value of having nitrogen, it seems like we have a pretty powerful argument to try to encourage our agricultural community to participate. And the areas where this agriculture exchange will hopefully occur is in a location that is furthest away from our drinking water wells within the community. So I just want to just kind of emphasize that again, that agricultural exchange is a good idea, and we need to, you know, try to work with our agricultural community to try to implement.
Staff. With that, then, I'd like to remind everyone of our meeting on the 30th. We propose to have two technical memos for that. One is our regional treatment option, and the other is our discussion, our technical memo on AB 32 green and greenhouse gases. So that ought to be very valuable information for because we've been getting input from the community on the importance of that. And also, I'd like to thank everyone who submits things, or comments in writing. They are going to the EIR team. I know the project team right now is trying to get answers to questions up on the internet to the technical memos, so they are publishing those. I recommend everyone go back to the internet, and you'll see these the final drafts of the technical memos, which include questions and comments from the public and responses to those. So again, thank you very much. And with that, we will adjourn our meeting.